We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Okay.
No. They let me know, and they actually invited. You know, Bruce Harrington was there, and the other brother, because there are three brothers: Keith, Bruce, and the other Harrington brother. So they were there. I was there. They invited us to go, and there was a lot of media outlets there, newspapers, and people that were interviewing us. So we were invited, and we knew. You know, we were prepared.
You know, it was after that that Michelle started getting hang-up phone calls.
Oh, really?
Yeah, actually, right after that, within, gosh, I don't know, maybe a day after or 2 days after that press conference in 2001, yeah, I got some hang-up calls every time I'd come home for about a week from work. And at the time, I had two little boys, and I was a single mom. And I'd come home, and it was one phone call after another, probably for a couple of hours long. I would say from, like, 6 o'clock to maybe 8 o'clock at night, I'd get hang-up calls. And maybe, I don't know, I can't remember how many. I think it was 10 to 20 calls a night for about a week after that press conference.
So that was even before this thing became so big. So, like, if this was a copycat, it would have to be a real obsessed weirdo, because had that guy even written the book yet?
No, I don't think anybody even knew that he used hang-up phone calls.
Okay.
The only thing was that press conference, and, you know, because I was in the news, and that's the only way they could have known even about me. So, yeah, it was a little scary because it could have been the East Area Rapist, Golden State Killer, or Original Night Stalker calling me. I don't know who it was. I just know it was a whole week worth of phone calls, hang-up calls. They'd listen to me for a minute, and then they'd hang up, or I'd hang up. You know, I'd say, hello,
and
hello.
You never tried to have the call traced?
Well, right about the time that I called law enforcement, the call stopped. Because I was going to get a trace put on my phone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, right when I did that, I wasn't getting any more calls. So,
I think that's when you buy a gun.
Yeah, well, I've got lots of security now.
Good. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. You still live in the area?
No.
I do not live
in the area. I live in a different area, and I have surveillance cameras all over my home.
Good.
I've got all kinds of good stuff.
Too.
Huh?
Well, that the only good part about that is that maybe the guy's still around, and we can bring him to justice, you know, because there would be sort of like, you know. I mean, these things last for a long time, but then they end up, I mean, some of them, they end up working out. I can't think, you know, the BTK guy, I guess. They call that guy. So it's within the realm of possibility.
Well, there's a lot of cases. Yeah, there's a lot of cases being connected through the DNA right now. So I really have a lot of faith that our guy is going to get caught through DNA. And I don't think it's going to be too much longer. Just my gut feeling.
Really?
I don't know. What do you think, Gian?
I don't know. Having learned the logistics of what they have to go through, if he's dead, it's going to take quite a while because you got to go through more channels. If he's alive, then it's going to be easier because all they do is need a lucky hit or a family DNA.
Right.
So I don't know. It all depends if he's dead or alive. But he's been very careful.
Right.
It's not going to be easy, I think. He's just been too careful.
Mm-hmm.
This was truly his hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. If he's alive.
I don't think it'll be a direct hit. I think it'll be more like a family hit on DNA.
That's possible, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They prefer male DNA. I know that.
Who's this? The police?
The police, the sheriffs, yeah, they told me that they prefer male DNA.
That cries out for a joke, but I'm going to leave it alone. Well, I hope they get him. That's all I can say. I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's a really haunting case.
It's unreal.
I'm hearing a lot of doors squeaking. Is anyone near a door squeaking, Gian?
I heard a door squeaking. It's not here.
Oh, okay. No, it's all right. We've had some weird noises in the background in the past, so we were kind of That was like, given the topic and everything tonight too, it's like, I keep hearing like a creaky door opening. I'm like, no,
it's my chair. Let me get off this chair. There we go.
Oh no, you stay on the chair. You stay on the chair.
His MO was so unique. You would think that if he was striking over the, in some other place, at least in this country, that it would be uncovered. You know, his
right.
MO, he just did not vary that MO. He didn't vary what he said, like he read from a script.
And so
it's interesting where he could have gone for 5 years.
That's true. Somebody suggested on the thing college, but he would have been pretty old given when he started all this. So who knows?
Why would he stop in college, though? It's like he stopped for 5 years and then comes back to an area he knew.
Right.
Like I said, it's not like he even indicates he stayed around the L.A. area and had incidentally uncovered, you know, other prime stalking areas, which there's many in the whole L.A. area. It's he came back to Irvine within a mile of where he had struck before and by a home that's, you know, there's a park right behind it. Then on the other side of the street, there's a canal.
Yeah.
So he stuck to his M.O. And just where he could have been for 5 years.
Hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
we
sure.
lived
yeah.
next to, you know, it was just orange groves because Irvine was a new community. And so really it was just a lot of orange groves, you know, on the other side of that wall. There was nothing over there. Now it's all built up. And then behind our house was the park. So it was orange groves on the side and then the park in the back. So just a new community. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the house was for sale. That was very common, that homes were for sale.
Now, Gian, you sort of favor a wreck, you know, a wrecking crew guy. But I've heard also the theory that he's like that he was a painter or some kind of contractor, which kind of fits in with if you guys are talking about an emerging community.
The thing mm-hmm. there's also that he could have been with real estate. Why were so many of the homes for sale? Well, how would that fit? And then he started in new communities. He started with old ones first.
That's an interesting theory too, yeah.
So homes for sale and new communities became his MO.
Yeah.
The guy that
though,
I'm
you know?
Looking at and researching right now in Sacramento, he was in real estate. And he's about 59 years old. He's no longer in Sacramento. He's out of California now. But he is in real estate. So that's one of the theories.
It's interesting, yeah. And your POIs are still alive, Michelle?
The two that I'm working on right now are still alive. And there's one that I'm, the one that's from Irvine, that's a little bit scarier. I don't even know if he is, you know, linked to our case, but he's definitely scary.
Oh, yikes, yeah.
Well, yeah,
you get
shocked
really
how many creeps are out there.
Yeah,
well, it's not funny, but it's weird in a way, because Gian was telling a story, and he said it was like one of the murder victims, and he said it was like the bedroom basher. It's like, so what were these, like, serial killers just running wild all over California at the time or something?
I think they were, yeah. The bedroom basher was active. Who was that? Parker or something? Was his name Gerald Parker? Then Richard Ramirez
was
soon
caught.
To be active. Yeah, all of them were caught, but this guy.
And the Zodiac.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Has any crazy person tried to link the two yet? That always happens.
Oh, God forbid.
They haven't yet. Oh, God, they will.
It's
they will.
Zodiac was too distinct as well. Zodiac was a heavyset older guy.
Son of Zodiac.
I think they're just trying to link the original Night Stalker, Easter Egg Rapist, with the Vestalia Ransacker. Right, Gian?
What is that?
Isn't that what they
were
thinking?
Vestalia?
Vestalia
Ransacker.
What's the Ransacker? Is this like a burglar?
The Ransacker, I'm not sure about that case. I need a lot more information on it. This was a guy that in the San Joaquin Valley of California, there's this college town of Visalia. It's in the midst of all the farm fields. It's an old town. And 2 years before EAR started, there was this guy that was robbing all these homes in a specific area. and he wouldn't steal much of anything of value, but, you know, blue chip stamps, and he would eat ice cream out of the refrigerator, but he'd ransack the home, like EAR did, or
yeah.
would do. And he was never apprehended. He was very clever in his stalking, apparently. Well, he didn't have to be too clever because they weren't really chasing him as much as they should. But after he stops in Visalia, the EAR then commences within maybe 5-6 months in Sacramento. And so there are those who did wish to link the Visalia ransacker, as he's called, to EAR. But there's a composite that's supposed to be of the ransacker, and it's this chubby knock-knee guy with a short haircut, and that does not fit EAR at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
If that is correct, if that really is him.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are phantoms. EAR, even with all the composites, it still is this really the one? Because they're composites taken after the fact of someone seen before the fact. No witness, no
right.
victim ever saw EAR clearly because he had the mask on.
Right, right. And
so
even, even the box taking, jobs, they didn't get the mask
these
on.
These are composites of some young guy seen in the park or walking in the streets before or whatever. And
it could just be some random guy.
Yeah.
It's not even like, they're not the composites are just of people that were seen in the area, not even like necessarily, you know, kind of around the time of the crime, but not like running away.
The consistency is that some of these guys have a long face and hair parted on the right, so maybe that's him. The Billy Mumy one, as they call it, is the most widely circulated because that looks the most fiendish and it's the most accurate looking of a person. So if that's him, that would be good. It's a long face, narrow chin. It's the one that was taken after someone was seen on a street a couple days before a victim 24 was hit, and that's the composite.
Right, right. I assume when you look into a POI, it must be so difficult nowadays, but because you really, especially with this case, you really sort of have to, I guess, rely on almost like a paper trail and a records trail, right? I mean, how else can to know if this person was there at the time, and then they would have been in a different area? So it's hard, I guess.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I do is look up where they lived and worked and in that whole time frame in that 10 years from 76 to 86, that's what I do first. See where they lived and worked.
How do you, I guess, is there a way to find that kind of information out, or?
Oh, yeah.
Some of it's online.
Yeah, I mean, I can. You can, yeah.
Well, it was also, we were talking earlier about privacy and my death DNA proposal. When you think about we were talking about these serial killers running wild all over California, too. And it's nowadays, I think this guy would get caught easily because of all the surveillance they have everywhere. And I just think that there would be mistakes that would be picked up at the time. You know what I'm saying? So it's good in a sense. I mean, we give up some privacy, but at the same time, it's like this guy's car probably would have got picked up on a bank camera when he drove around the corner or something.
He couldn't use the phone shtick today, the hang-up phone calls, because you can get a call back right away, you know the number.
Right, right.
Because it comes over. Now, back then, you just had the old rotaries or push-button phones, and someone called, you don't know what their number was.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you don't get a lot of those
calls. Don't get
calls.
The obscene phone calls anymore.
Yeah. So, I think, I guess that's one of the good things about today's world, is that, these crazy people, at least they get caught eventually. And hopefully with this technology, we'll be able to do it with the DNA evidence. How far are you now? Gian, you have this person of interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do now? I mean,
I want to get his handwriting. That's a lot more difficult than you might imagine.
It sounds incredibly difficult, so it's even more difficult than that?
Yes, it is, because I don't want to, tip off who it is. He's a person of interest. I'm not going to go to any family member, which most of them are dead anyway. I'm not going to go to some old school friend. Who would you have an old school friend's handwriting from 40 years ago?
I don't know who would have this guy's handwriting from 40 years ago. It sounds insane to try and chase down.
A legal document might have it. something he might have been involved in where he had to have a handwritten.
Oh, he might have had to write like a witness statement or something.
Or something like that, or a handwritten note on an official document that would be in the courts or something over another case. If he was involved in an accident.
An envelope they put in his mailbox.
What's that?
An envelope that he put in his mailbox. Outgoing mail. Take a picture.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so so if you get that, then what do you do, Gian? I mean, is there any possibility that, because you said you got to exhume this guy, or are we talking about the living people now?
Well, if it's a dead person, then, yeah, you'd have to exhume him or get family DNA. But it would have to be, you know, it would have to be the handwriting would have to give them probable cause. They simply aren't going to walk up to someone and says, hey, this guy thinks you're your dead brother or dead uncle or whatever.
Right, right, right.
Was this notorious serial villain? Can we go dig up his body and take his DNA?
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to tell them to shove it.
And I suppose it's you're kind of in the same position, right, Michelle? It's like, how far do you, I guess you turn it over to the people of the, with law enforcement, so I guess that
I turn it over to law enforcement, but I might go a little further than Gian. I don't know.
What do you mean?
Yes,
you don't know?
I do give it. Well, you know, how far will I go? Gosh, I don't know. I do as much as I possibly can legally,
yeah.
And the rest, and then the rest I give to law enforcement.
Yeah, well, I guess you won't really know until they tell you, like, hey, we got him or something, right? Let's hope.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to dig into anybody's trash, though. So. But, yes, I give them a name. Trust me, I've wanted to do that, but I have not done that yet.
So you feel pretty passionately about this person of interest. You're pretty confident?
Yes, unfortunately, he's just a little bit too far from me. So I have to, I'm giving that one to law enforcement. And it is actually, they could not eliminate him, so they are working on him right now.
He doesn't live in the Boston area, I hope.
No, he does not live in Boston.
Because that's where I am. I don't want this guy putting the kibosh on me.
Well, you could go dig in his trash then in Boston.
That's, well, yeah.
I know.
You can dig in anyone's trash. Yeah, you let me know. All right. Well, I guess I want to talk to Gian about the Bermuda Triangle and stuff. And so I want to thank you for coming on the show, Michelle. I really appreciate it. I'm so sorry about what happened.
Thank you for letting me come on. Yeah, thank you for letting me come on. I'm really glad you guys are talking about this case and getting more people out there to learn about it. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'd say it's my pleasure, but it sounds wrong. So, you know, but it was. I really I appreciate your easygoing nature, you know, because sometimes I don't know how, I feel like I fumble some of these observations.
I know, you did great.
So,
you did great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gian, too.
Appreciate
it,
coming.
Gian. All right.
Sure. Have a great night.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.
Well, that was very interesting, Gian. I think,
you know, in terms of murder mysteries as fiction, and they have trouble understanding that it's going on in real life. And just like in the movies, family members get involved and want to chase down. I mean, you know, their loved ones were murdered. Someone, you know, these predators are arrogant. They really target you for their own amusement. But they have to understand that even 30, 40 years later, someone's going to be tracking them. They can't be allowed to stop looking over their shoulders.
That's true.
And it's very few family members that do that. I know Michelle's had to learn to become more comfortable speaking about it and so forth.
Oh, she did great. She did great.
Not many do that. That's why a lot of these shows happen now, because she has come forward to speak about it and they have someone to use as a focal point.
Right. She's the face of this.
They don't want to speak to a geek like me.
Oh, Gian.
No, I don't want to be on the tube anyway over this. But they need someone who can be the center of it. And, you know, family members who are actively doing something, have something to say, and can convey it are very crucial. And some of them, you know, puck up the courage and and start doing this. And it's not very easy. I've had to hear, you know, what they have to go through sometimes.
Well, yeah, it's like, yeah, like I said when we brought Michelle on, it was like I wasn't really sure what to say, but it's there was a lot to talk about. It's a incredibly unique experience for her. I mean, you know, it's like there's not too many, like I said earlier, it's not too many people like I've ever talked to who've had an experience like that. So it's, I can imagine that it is maddening to always wonder what, where this guy is and everything too. So,
and then when they realize 20 years after the fact that they weren't dealing with a random, that they didn't have to deal with a guy. Both Michelle and Debbie Domingo told me that I think Debbie Domingo had an interview in which she mentioned that as well, that, you know, they, you know, until there was linked, they didn't know if this was a personal revenge and they had to be looking over their shoulders.
Yeah.
If someone was going to come after them. And then to realize it was a serial killer and their loved one was only one of several victims. Now, you know, the complete arrogance that this creep did this to so many people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that it was not just a one-time revenge thing by
right.
A maniac, but this guy systematically hunted people for his own amusement.
Yeah.
Realize, like, you've got that kind of evil fiend involved. And so it's something what Michelle and Debbie have done with the case.
Yeah. And as you said, it was on 48 Hours about 2 weeks ago.
Yes, and I think Paula's on soon enough.
And your stuff is free. It's right there on the website. So
that's what it's there for everybody to use. It's the only way I could see to help really do this. A book, you know, a couple of the detectives, as I said, Lieutenant Crompton, Lieutenant Shelby, Richard Shelby also wrote a book, Hunting a Psychopath. A private detective named Jack Gray wrote the book, Hot Prowl. And so the books have been written, and I didn't see how a book could really help. I wanted to get the guy in live action as my investigation was displayed for people and then help significantly, you know, really educate people on just how, what this guy did. Because when I discovered his stalking pattern, when I relived it first person, videotaping it, I have a YouTube channel where I simply walk along with a camera following in his footsteps, you realize what he went through.
Yeah.
What he was, how much he devoted to this. And there was no way that anything but a website could really contribute to conveying to people just what this guy really was. Because you have to remember that he was largely obscure. The true crime people knew about him. But over the country, you know, this, you know, everybody's heard about Jack the Ripper or the Zodiac or whatever, but this guy, who was far worse than either of them put together, and he was largely obscure.
Yeah. Well, he's not anymore, and we're coming for him, and we're going to get him. So that's all I'm going to say about Eurons. And you can read more about it at the Quester Files. And you spell that Q-U-E-S-T-E-R. And don't forget the, so it's the Quester Files. Or I guess you could probably just Google Gian Cassar, and I bet he pops up. But we're not saying goodnight yet. I just wanted to pivot away from Eurons. Do you have anything else to say about this case before we talk about your other stuff?
Just, it almost killed me.
How's that? Just from the...
I was, got so sick during it. I had no idea how much I devoted to it and how ill I was getting. Just trying to figure out where all the crime scenes were, trying to obsess on...
You became as obsessed as the obsessive.
Yeah, it does help put the light bulb on every head what this guy had to devote to do this.
Yeah.
It's not like he just walked up to the house and knocked on the door. He really... And the victims' homes, once again, were just a fraction. He was in neighbors' homes. He was stalking for potential victims. He had alternates lined out just in case the victim changed their schedule.
Yeah, he was a bad hombre.
This guy was obsessive.
Yeah. Well, the Quester Files is where folks can find out about that, and it's under cold cases. Read about it. So, and I'd like to see you on some of these shows, dude. You deserve it. You're doing awesome research, so... You know, awesome
I would have nothing to say. What you know, they need something to film. They don't need a talking head. If someone wanted to come out in the neighborhoods with me, and maybe have, I would instruct, you know, this is where he was, this is what he had to do. I might do something like that. I went out there for Fox locally, for the news. I would go on the news, but for a formal sit down where they put makeup on you and you're talking head, what would I say? I mean, what would I say? Just what I'm saying now, and it's nothing worth conveying to people.
You have a gravitas that helps. I think
true crime people do not like that I investigate Kolchakian mysteries as well. They don't like.
I was going to mention that. That's a good segue.
That I investigate the triangle. They don't like that I investigated Bigfoot.
Right, right, right.
Or these other mysteries.
Well,
what's the Amityville horror?
You're getting into all my mind here, Gian. This is interesting. Yeah, because to segue into the Kolchakian mysteries, you've kind of
The X-Files
gotten into the true crime community. So it's clearly from what you're saying, they're not fans of the Bermuda Triangle and stuff. So what's your perspective on all these web sleuths?
We don't even want to go there. I mean, a lot of them do not like me.
That's what I figured, yeah.
Investigative, what I try and explain is investigative method or scientific method, same thing. It doesn't matter what the object is. It is the same investigative process, and I seek to answer, you know, mysteries. I seek to solve them, whether it's a true crime, whether it's a serial villain, whether it's the claims of, disappearances, of course, you can investigate. They're tangible. The triangle is the one tangible Kolchakian mystery out there. People don't understand that because these planes and ships and people did exist, and they are most certainly gone.
Right.
Whereas when you're dealing with the other stuff, you're dealing with subjective reports. You know, someone claims they saw Bigfoot, claims they saw a flying saucer. That's all very subjective. You have to even examine footprints carefully and plaster casts and all that kind of stuff. But the triangle is tangible. So I always viewed it as, an adventure. With enough sense to understand mystery, when you find a derelict vessel with nobody on board, when you hear a pilot's voice panicking over the radio talking about a weird object harassing his aircraft and then he vanishes. And I have that audio up on YouTube as well. I was the one who discovered that in the National Transportation Safety Board files.
Are these triangle incidents?
Yes, triangle incidents. That audio I have up on YouTube of the pilot panicking, the Mayday, before he vanished in 1980, he's talking about a flying saucer or a UFO, a weird object.
And you found this in the National Archives, you said?
The National Transportation Safety Board has it transcribed in the report.
Ah.
And the sister of the victim had a fourth-generation FAA tape of the Mayday, and she gave me a copy.
Wow, really?
Yeah, so I finally put it on YouTube. Whitley Strieber had cleaned it up for me because he had it on his show years ago. When I gave him a copy, so you can hear it really much better.
That's great.
I put the words in so you can understand that he's speaking with a Spanish accent, the pilot. But see, to me, that's, I'm investigating something real, and it's a question of how you investigate. And, I'm not going to be out there with these guys with aluminum foil on their head. I wish to find out the truth about these. I'm not going to deny that these kind of mysteries go on. But there's a lot of people who only look at the brand name and think, well, he's out there doing what all these other cottage industry cranks do. That's why I valued Randy Wainwright, who writes the Doc Ford series for Putnam. He gave me that nice endorsement saying, what a danger it is that I investigate this type of stuff, but rest easy, I'm not like the others. I have that on my website. I always use that as the premier endorsement because I thought he really got it right. That's what I've had to deal with. People just look at the brand name and think, my God, you investigate that kind of stuff. Well, people have not for, I think, years and years seen someone really investigate these. They hear people regurgitate some narrative, wallow in this mystery, go out there with field cams for Bigfoot on these shows or talk about aliens sucking themselves up into some kind of spaceship and giving them the spiritual vibe or something. And that's not what I do. I'm out tangibly to investigate and find out the truth behind some of these famous mysteries, whether it's a serial killer like Jack the Ripper.
Well, talk about the Zodiac.
I devote myself to it.
We've talked.
Zodiac comes out in winter or fall this year, horoscope.
Oh, I love that title, horoscope, yeah.
That will be my second true crime installment after Scarlet Autumn.
And I guess I don't want to, do spoilers, but, how... let's break down this Zodiac. You have a feeling you know who you have a person of interest.
No, I have a suspect now. He's beyond person of interest.
Oh.
He was the original person of interest, and I followed up on some key points and got into his records. I got some very nice photos of him. I've gone way the distance with this case because this is a case that scared me, and that's why I was so waylaid with it, because I knew I had to get this guy's handwriting.
Interesting.
And a lot of details on him, on his life, on his stepfather. He was actually raised without celebrating any holidays.
Is he alive or dead?
He's dead.
Okay.
Amazingly, he lived about 5 miles from me.
Wow.
And he died months after I began reading about the Zodiac. I was not investigating. I was doing all the reading first, and I don't consider that investigating. Reading the books, reading stuff online. There were some very good websites that were put up because Zodiac was so famous.
Right, right.
And ironically, he died in 2010.
Damn! Now, see, I'm. Can we talk about this? Can we talk about this? I don't want to like blow your book out or anything.
No, I'm not going to mention his name.
No. I don't want to know.
I mean,
his name.
I've mentioned an alias name.
I don't.
But
yeah,
that's not going to tell people anything anyway.
No. I don't want to know his name. I just want to like delve into the details of like how you say you've taken him from a POI to a now I'm saying POI. I feel like I'm turning into Joe Kenda. You say you went from a POI to a suspect. So
yeah, that's a big difference. See, everybody's a person of interest. Someone turns you in, and you're a person of interest.
Oh, believe me, I've been there.
Yeah, they're going to check you off the list. Well, you can't check someone off the list, but you begin to get more information, and they fit, and you're a couple of points away from clinching it or absolving him. Now he's a suspect. Because you can't say, he's now heavily duty suspected. Whereas someone is simply, you saw someone in the neighborhood or you were walking in the neighborhood, someone turned you in, the police come knock on your door.
Yeah.
And you're a person of interest until they knock you off the list.
Right.
So, no, I've gone to the suspect level with this guy, and I've played it far closer to the vest because of the fame.
Mm-hmm.
Of the case and all the folklore about it. That's why I have the website up on Questor Files, the Zodiac section. It was to basically get rid of the folklore about the master criminal that he was turned into, like he's Dr. Moriarty and only Sherlock Holmes can get the guy. And the book is now putting everything concisely in order without me having to explode all this folklore. I don't want to waste all this time over discussing the narrative and the popular discourse about him. I investigate the case, not the folklore, not the narrative.
Now, in
all right, my own narrative.
Because I'm like a news junkie, and I find this funny. Are you going to have the guy's name in the book? Are we going to see you
in the Daily
Mail, where it's like, man says he solves the Zodiac case? You know they're going to write.
I also promised Napa. See, I was going to turn him into Napa, and I contacted Napa County Sheriffs, and they were, of course, skittish. That was my feeling on it. And they said, please write down concisely exactly why you believe this and all the points. And if it's, we'll pass it on to a detective who will look into the case. They don't have someone working it anymore. And that kind of surprised me. And if they find merit in it, they'll contact me. And I thought, I have to give them the silver bullet. That's what they want, and that's only fair to expect. Because detectives aren't historical investigators. They don't
right.
got to go back 50 years, and I do.
And what's the silver bullet?
The silver bullet is I get this guy's handwriting and match it to his letters, because the Zodiac left lots of letters. I think he disguised his handwriting to some extent, but he should still be able, in some of his letters, for it to come through, and that's what I'm just very close to getting. I think a family member is actually going to go to the military with the correct documents, and I'll get all of his records released.
All right.
So I will know exactly why he was discharged early from the military. It was an injury or a sickness, which...
Oh, so you... how are you getting these documents?
A family member in this case, I believe, will be, they can request, and then they will get everything. The Air Force will not release to me personal things.
So what's your...
Allowed.
could this be solved through DNA, this case? I know a lot of people think that. Do you put credence in the whole stamp and all that?
I don't think it would have to, because the handwriting is so distinct and so prolific that if I can get enough handwriting, I think that would be sufficient, certainly for me to declare I solved it. And if NAPA wishes to go over my thesis and take it to DNA, the stamps are very iffy.
Yeah. Could your contact who's related? Could your contact who's related request the DNA test?
No, I don't think so. I think the relationship is too far off, and there was no boy, there was no son.
Hmm.
In this case, in my guy's case. And now San Francisco firmly believes that there are fingerprints of the Zodiac in blood in that cab. So that might be one way as well. But I'm banking on the I have to have enough to convince them to go further with the guy.
Right.
While I go to the, you know, throat with my book.
When's this book coming out?
It's supposed to be fall or winter this year, because I had hoped that, you know, it is written. I'm waiting for that final piece. So I have the entire book is written, except for the final chapter.
And this is what? What's the final? Is it more handwriting?
Yeah, the book, the horoscope is written. The entire book is written, except for the final chapter. When I finally submit my thesis, I'll be writing, and then I'll show the handwriting.
Okay, yeah.
And they'll see his face for the first time in the book.
Nice.
Interesting, from what I've already uncovered about his life and his stepfather and his mother's many marriages. Not being raised with any holidays. His stepfather, who raised him, was an aircraft engineer. He had been a flyer during the war. And he didn't Christmas, nothing like that. 4th of July, he never practiced any holidays, never celebrated them. And he became, his stepfather was one of the few people who would have known what a radian was, because he was an aircraft engineer.
It's a radian.
A radian is that, you know, that unusual measurement of arc that the Zodiac mentioned.
Ah.
And, you know, it's very arcane, and what profession would actually have to know about that? Well, aircraft engineers and rocket guys, because it's a measurement of arc.
Mm.
And I had to study what it is. It's how you try and figure out the curve, you know, like a launch, a curvature, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
From a certain location. So I'm very confident that I have the right guy finally. And he did have an Air Force background. He would have had the right type of wing walker shoes. He was nothing but basically a glorified paper hanger in the Air Force, which is what Marty Lee, the chief of detectives in San Francisco, thought the Zodiac was, because he worked with paper too much, he thought.
Yeah.
And he had won an award in the Air Force. His short, he was in there under 4 years. He did make lieutenant, but he had won an award in all his time, and he had the expert ribbon in small arms marksmanship, which means he was damn good with a pistol.
Hmm.
There are three grades of marksmanship: marksman, sharpshooter, and expert.
He was expert.
And he was expert.
Interesting. All right. Well, keep me posted on when you're going to release this book and when you're going to announce the name, because maybe I'll hassle you to do it on my show first.
Okay.
Unless you promised it to someone else.
I'm not promised it to anybody else. I've tried to be very careful about this.
All right. Well, when the book is, when people can get the book and it's ready to hit the streets, you let me know. We'll coordinate something.
I will do so.
Awesome. Now, have you? I guess with the Bermuda, what's the Bermuda Triangle? People can just punch in Gian Cassar and on Amazon, and that'll bring up the new Bermuda Triangle book.
Yes, that should be listed by next week or the week after.
Nice, nice. And that's available next week, so people can search it out. Do you advance? I guess I'm trying to recall, because we talked a long, long time ago and about the Bermuda Triangle. Actually, we haven't talked in 3 years, as we were saying earlier, since the Jack the Ripper episode, but we haven't talked about the Bermuda Triangle in a long, long time. So refresh me on what your theory is behind these disappearances.
Why don't I give you a copy of my new book when it comes out?
All right. Oh, how about this? Let me change the question then. has your opinion on the triangle changed since the first book to the second book, or has your theory only been strengthened? I'm guessing it's only been strengthened because I know how tenacious of a researcher you are, but has anything come up that's made you take, you know, second guess anything?
I've refined it. This installment will deal more with electronic fog, its possible generation, and what it can do. I disturbingly get more into UFOs, which is not a topic I really like. I don't like that culture.
Yeah.
But I bring up all the evidence that links to that. But I talk mostly, you know, the first chapter is discussing the old classic cases. I have to lay the foundation so the reader will understand the significance of the changes in this century.
Mm-hmm.
Because my last book was published in 2003.
Right, right. That's what I mean.
So a lot has happened since then. A lot of derelicts are occurring closer to shore now, a lot of interesting incidents closer to shore than before. A lot of smaller boats are involved, a number of aircraft interesting incidents, and more information on electronic fog incidents, and then collating all the unusual cases of UFOs harassing aircraft or being reported. It's a refinement of all that was without wasting time on things that are simply not possible. I'm not introducing the subject now after 25 years like I was with my last book. I tried to be very anodyne with that and just very
jump right
objective.
In. Yeah, this is like
but
Bermuda.
This is refining.
Yeah, it's not just Bermuda Triangle 2. It's like Bermuda Triangle 102. It's like read the first book. And so it's, I guess, people, here's an interesting idea or thought or question, and I hope you know the answer to this. Because people, you know, they think this Bermuda Triangle thing is just like a relic from the past. So since the last book and this new book, how many disappearances have there been in the Triangle? Because that would be what? Like almost 15 years.
Oh, I didn't exactly count. I have a record in the book.
You can just guesstimate.
But I don't list everything. But, you know, the aircraft disappearances are way down because of the economy. There's not a lot of flying going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
They used to average like 20 per decade, and I would say maybe there's 6 or 7 in that period of time now since 2003 that qualify as very interesting. It's harder to uncover them. The military is really clammed up after 9/11. There's all these restrictions on releasing documents, so I don't have any U.S. military aircraft disappearances in that time. Mm-hmm. But the majority are
that's true.
A lot of boats, a lot of derelicts. Unusual incidents in which blood is found in the boats, dogs found left behind, but the owner's gone. Sometimes the bodies found with some of these all near the same beach. So it's almost like it's like out of Jaws. There's this track line of all these disappearances or derelictions over a few years coming on the Gulf side of Florida down to Key West, sometimes with boats ripped from their moorings. The anchor is, you know, they're drifting, and you could tell they were anchored. Their line was out, but it's frayed. The anchor was cut, or it was ripped from its anchorage, and the person is gone on board, or something like that.
Weird. These are all in the new book. That sounds awesome. That sounds amazing, dude. You're amazing. You're on this. You jump from. I don't care what the haters say, man. Fuck the haters, as we like to say on the show, dude. You're jumping from Eons now, blowing my mind on that to this Bermuda Triangle stuff. So,
well, it's 27 years of investigating.
Oh, we're going to lose the live audience in 90 seconds. So can we just chat for a little tiny bit afterwards? I'm almost at the end of the sort of the bucket of ideas here, but I still want to get into Bigfoot. But yeah, screw those people that are in the true crime field that are complaining, because it's like they only focus on the true crime, dude. You're a multitasker. You know, you're not a specialist.
The real-life X-Files. Well, a lot of these X-Files incidents are very interesting if you do it right, if you truly investigate, not if you just want to turn around and regurgitate the narrative. And I have little interest in them myself.
Exactly.
But I wish to find the truth.
Everybody's seen the narrative. That's the little thing, you know, from In Search Of. Now, let me thank the folks who are listening live who may not later go and get the MP3. Thanks for listening live. And you can find out more from Gian at Quest. Let me get it up here because it was the Questor Files, or just Google Gian Kassar. And that's, again, the Questor Files.com. And he's got the new book, Bermuda Triangle. And find out more for me at Binall of America, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. Thanks to all the folks in the chat room. And, yeah, where is she counting me down? Come on, hon. There it is. So anyway, yeah, the Quester Files. Where is it? Yeah, Q-U-E-S-T-E-R. Tell me about the Quester Files, just the name, because I'm wondering about that.
The Quester Files, yeah, that's correct.
Yes, but what's the origin of that? Is this from the Kassar?
It's making a play on my unusual surname, which most people don't believe is mine, but it is. I got tired of putting these other events under the BermudaTriangle.org website. And so finally I came up with a title that could make a funny play on my own unusual surname, and I came to be known as the Q-Man or the Quester.
Yes, the Q-Man, I've seen, yeah.
Yeah, it simply set better. I like Q-Man, so.
The Q-Man is good.
It's easier for people.
You should get the Q-Man.com if it's possible. That would be easier to direct people to. That's my suggestion.
Yeah, I should get a little superhero shirt, you know.
It's not going that far.
Superhero of
the If you solve the Zodiac case, dude, you'll be allowed to wear a superhero shirt for the rest of your life. I'll say it now. It would be interesting. Maybe there'll be. So, do you think that, like I said, you'll be sort of the center of this media? You know, I know I certainly will be reporting on it. So, do you expect that there'll be? Maybe you'd know in a sense. Like when these things kind of bubble up, do they ever go anywhere, or is it just like?
Well, Zodiac.
Yeah. Yeah, like
well,
if your book comes out and the Daily Mail and the Sun and all these websites are like, guy in California says he solved the Zodiac mystery, it's, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, and then it's like, who is, you know, you're given all the details and everything, like, do you think that'll increase the pressure on the police to actually do it, or are they just so used to this kind of thing that they're just like, whatever?
I'm sure I'll announce it on my website when I'm certain, but all the details will come out in my book. I would dread what some of the news wires would say. They would just say this web sleuth or something. Found it, like I stumbled upon it. I'm just some geek out there.
What would you like to
be
called, an investigative reporter or a...
real-life Kolchak. Q-Man. I'm going to have to make my own reputation, but I don't know. People usually call you a researcher when they don't want to, you know. And researching doesn't mean you know how to analyze anything.
Yeah, research is like
an independent investigator.
There you go. Independent investigator, yeah. Well, dude, you're one of the best ones out there, honestly. I've long said on the program that it's like, I want answers, man. Like, I know a lot of people in this field, and even friends of mine, who are like, no, man, the journey's great. It's like, fuck the journey, dude. I want to get to the destination. So if we ever find an answer to any of these mysteries, I'll be psyched. And you're doing the work here to actually try and solve the mysteries. You're not just like, hey, isn't it a crazy story? So that's why I hold you in such high regard.
Thank you very much. Because if you don't, at the end of the journey, if you're still, you know, if you're nowhere, I mean, you have to go back then. And the journey back is always boring.
Right. Yeah.
I want to go somewhere, and I want to at least get a piece of it. So if I haven't solved it, I've at least made an advance that's going to help someone else come along and take it to the next mile and finish it.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure
if they had something significant, what's the point? I mean, there's no point.
I'm sure a lot of people rely on those Q files on Eurons because those things are incredibly in depth.
That's the most popular section of the Quester files.
Well, it's like a reference book. It's outstanding. It really is. It's incredible. It kept me up at night, but folks should definitely check it out. Now, the one last thing I want to ask you about is Bigfoot, because now looking back at your line sheet or whatever you'd call it, you know, your different books, the Bigfoot one still stands out as particularly, like, unique in a way. I mean, I guess the Bermuda Triangle is kind of paranormal, but the Bigfoot's, like, straight up uber paranormal in a sense. Now, I know, obviously, that you...
Well, I think it became that way, and that's why I set out to, you know, the book title is Recasting Bigfoot. You were correct about
yes,
that?
Yes, yes.
And it was a play on, you know, the finding the true footprint, recasting what the true footprint really is, and following the actual evidence of Bigfoot to uncover what he actually is and looks like. And this is a very tangible pursuit to me. I thought it was very fascinating to read all of John Green's old books, how they covered, you know, 1958 Northern California, and they're out there and they're Scotch plaid flannel shirts and their glasses on like Elmer Fudd, looking for what they believed was a very real creature. And then slowly, you know, that faded away, and the Patterson film, you know, there are those who will believe that, but then it became so ethereal. You know, Bigfoot's out there walking with the little gray aliens and UFOs in
people's
backyards, and it became paranormal. It became this huge folklore. And I wanted to find the truth, and recasting Bigfoot took everybody back to
the beginning.
To the beginning, and I wanted people to get that old vibe again from the 50s to the 70s when all these documentaries were made, and you know, go out there and really look, not just this cheap reality TV stuff with a shaky night camera in a cave, this game trail camera.
Yeah, yeah.
And these guys that go out everywhere and invent, you know, they're seeing Bigfoot left and right, and that's rubbish. I mean, the Indians made it very plain in 1847 already that Mount St. Helens was the last home of the Skookum, the cannibal Skookum. And I had to go through all these stories and, you know, putting it all in context, there's no way you can believe Bigfoot exists over the whole country when he was limited to the Pacific Northwest. And I'm trying to bring back everything to where it was 50 years ago, and we start over again. But we go out and look, and it's sincere expeditions in the old style back then, not in, you know, just a couple of homeboys going out to a campfire. A friend of mine was on a radio show recently, and he called most 99% of Bigfoot people live-action role players.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, they're like ghost hunters now, you know? They're like ghost hunters.
Yeah, it's like guys that go out to the graveyard and are trying to listen to something that will register on a meter or a tape recorder, or they'll see a little whiff of mist or something like that, or hear a creak or a groan. Where does that take one?
Now, did you ever, I'm looking back here at my notes from that interview on the Bigfoot, and because I was remembering we talked about some tantalizing location, and I found it again. Morris Mountain in Canada, which is alleged to be the home territory of the feral human Sasquatch tribe. Did you ever find out any new information about that area? Has anyone tried to venture in there, or has there been any news out of there?
One of my devotees was going to go there, but it didn't work out. I've been so slammed with everything, I've not taken enough time off. I really want to get out in the field again and do with this subject what I did with all my true crime, go out and do all the video, photograph, really start laying out the Pacific Northwest and viable locations in detail with all these icons, all these pages, and people understand very serious approach that I'm looking for more than one thing. I'm looking for something that I think can be proved, and that it's a Native American anthropoid, that it is something that migrated up from South America, which is anathema to the Bigfoot crowd, that I even mentioned the existence of a Native American anthropoid, or more than one. So not an old world ape, not an old world anthropoid, but a Native American one.
Undiscovered.
Officially. There is a photograph of one. Which a lot of my work has been, I'm very convinced that the Loisy ape was real, and that it is the reality behind the Dissonaquois and all these masks, that these beautiful Indian artwork masks. Yeah, I love the artwork of the Pacific Northwest Indians, the totems, their dance masks. They're all very unique.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of them feature the Dissonaquois, the nude cannibal tribe of the forest, or it's sometimes known as a dangerous thing. It depends which tribe you're talking to. They had different interpretations, but they were hairy, about 5 feet tall, big hands, and then they whittled these masks out of wood.
Right.
It's always shown whistling or moaning, and it has this big ridge encircling the eye. And it, in fact, looks like a giant spider monkey. And this is what the Loisy ape looked like. It was an ape version, if you will, of a spider monkey, but it had no tail. And Francois Deloy described them in 1920 at this pair that he came across with his men, and they were walking on their hind legs, and they were ripping branches off and threatening, you know, screaming at the prospectors. They were looking for oil deposits in Venezuela, and they shot them. And then it took a picture of the female, propped it up on a crate, took a picture, and that's the famous and controversial picture of the Loisy ape. Professor Georges Montenon named it after François Deloy and believed it was real, about 5 feet tall. And it looks like the Dissonaquois masks of the Indians of the Pacific Northwest, and it fits their description, something 5 foot tall, huge hands. It was nasty. It would whistle. These things were known to whistle and travel in pairs. So new populations would arise wherever they migrated, and the Maya even had statues of them. So I'm convinced that Amaranthropodus loisi is real and that it is the truth behind the Dissonaquois, but that Bigfoot ultimately is something else. See, all these
two things, right?
Masks,
that was the
yeah.
key thing of your book, I recall. Bigfoot.
Yeah, that
so
is it's that, and Dissonaquois really is not it. All these Bigfooters use Indian artwork to prove that, see, they knew about ape-like features. So this justified their view that Bigfoot was this old-world Gigantopithecus that migrated over with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Indian artwork really mostly shows a Native American origin. It shows the Loisy ape, the Dissonaquois, and the Indians never said Dissonaquois was the Sasquatch or the Skookum. The white man came along and lumped it all together in one thing, that when the Indians spoke about Sasquatch, or Sasquaha George is what they really said, Sasquatch or Skookum or Siatic or Soquim, we thought they were all talking about the same thing, when in fact they're not. The Indians said Sasquatch was more than one tribe in itself, and clearly one tribe was human, they could speak. One tribe was not, but they were very similar. And Skookum itself might be something very different. Skookum were very dreaded on Mount St. Helens. So there was a lot to pick through, and it's not the folklore that we have today. This is from Old West journals, sightings by frontiersmen, records by Indians artwork.
Exactly,
so there's a lot that recasting Bigfoot had to go through, and it convinced an awful lot of people.
It blew my mind.
A lot came to my side.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I still remember the key aspects of it because it was so remarkable at the time. It's still remarkable, you know. It's unfortunate in a sense, dude, because you should be out there more because your stuff's so. I see why you're not out there more because, like, the Bigfoot conventions aren't going to bring you in, I guess, but they should be because you're putting out some interesting and unique ideas that are completely different from what,
They don't like that, though.
I know
people within the inner circle that do like me, and they warn me how I am a pariah. I am the most disliked man in Bigfootery. No one will mention my name. I wrote a blog with that title, The Most Disliked Man in Bigfootery, or The Man Bigfooters Love to Hate, something like that. And that got enormous action on Facebook. They were sharing it all amongst themselves. But people will not discuss me or recasting Bigfoot because they're afraid that the fight will break out, because a lot did come to my side saying that the narrative is a bunch of folklore out there that we have to go back, and I uncovered all this stuff. And I don't endorse the Patterson film, and that aggravates a lot of them.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. Your book really lays the case out that the Patterson film is a hoax. And it does a pretty good job of it. Maybe it certainly, you know, I vacillate all the time on it, and a large part of that uncertainty comes from your work. So
I wanted it to be real. I grew up believing it was real. I sat there, you know, the old documentary Mysterious Monsters with Peter Graves and those kind of things. You sit there and Grover Krantz would come on and yes, can anybody, you know, understand he's telling you the truth about this thing? That Patterson film is real, but as I, you know, grew older and investigated it more, I realized, sadly, the Patterson film was not. But I wanted it to be real. I truly did.
Yeah.
I don't think it affects it in any way because, you know, it's one man's incarnation of it, but the information goes back centuries. And there are those who won't believe in the Ape Canyon incident, but I do. That's where the miners encountered, where the miners were attacked in their cabin.
Yes.
I believe that in its basic form is correct. They went and told the newspapers, all five of them. But later in life, Fred Beck, really, who was the most vocal later, he got into some real strange spiritualism.
Weird.
and so he thought these were spiritual beings doing something with him or something. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, folks, there's a piece of the cabin actually at the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland,
Maine.
Is
there really?
Yeah. If you ever get out to
Maine. I know someone went up there and archaeology, they went up there and found where it was, they thought.
Yeah. If it's not a piece of the cabin, it's a piece of the fence post. I'll have to ask Lauren, and I'll tell people.
I don't think there was a fence post.
Then it was the cabin.
Because it was just a cabin out in the boonies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and shortly afterward, there were a couple of rangers went up there along with a Seattle newsman and Clarence Darrow's brother-in-law. His name was, he had a Norwegian name, I forget it now. And they noted what it was like, all the rocks about, that had pounded, been thrown down from overhead. And so something really happened that scared those five miners out of there.
Well, keep looking at these mysteries, man, please. It feels like you're almost at sort of a pause in a sense, though, because you're almost going to shift, I think, now into having to promote these books and stuff, because you get the Bermuda Triangle one coming up, and you're going to have the Zodiac one later in the year. But is there what's percolating on the horizon? What might you look at next after this? Because like I said, you've completed the big the Bermuda Triangle project, the Zodiac project's done. It looks like the Eons one is relatively at the end.
Yeah,
so what's next?
That will always be on the web. So any solution will be just to be mentioned on the web, and it will end there. And that section of the website will be used for educational purposes and for a year or so until it's necessary to take it down. But the next actual books, I'm going to do the one on, I've been writing it on Amelia Earhart's disappearance.
Nice! I love it.
Biography is so hard for me. When I get through the first part, which is her life and disappearance, it'll go quickly, because then I'll get into all the various theories and how these guys have changed and how a lot of the stuff that's claimed out there was retracted by those who promoted certain theories, about whatever island, and try and winnow it down. This is to be all in one volume, just what is the truth of it all. I'm not going to solve it, obviously, because you got to find her to do that.
Right, yeah.
But I wanted this to be the factual volume everybody can go to.
Do you think anyone has come close to sort of getting the story right yet? I guess if you did, you wouldn't be writing the book, right?
I don't think so, and I'm going to go into that in the book, how one has kind of liberated someone else's theory, what the basis was for this and that other theory and so forth, about the islands, about the Marshall Islands, how that really got involved. And it is fascinating. She was an interesting person, but she is remembered because of the mystery, despite how some people try and build her up as a great icon of feminism or something.
Yeah.
What has kept her with us is really the mystery.
Oh, absolutely.
There are many other icons who died, Wiley Post and Will Rogers. They died in that tragic plane crash, but there was no mystery, and they kind of faded away. But Amelia Earhart remains with us because of the mystery of her disappearance.
Now, have you ever...
enormous folklore that came up afterward.
Oh, absolutely. Have you ever... I guess you probably want to give it some time, but have you looked at the MH370 mystery? Because that seems like it's right up your alley.
Well, where to go with it? There's so much little information. There's a report now I'm sure I can download.
You want to give it some time?
Clearly, you can get that piece that turned up on Reunion Island. You can try and figure out the drift and pinpoint where it had to go down. It's a question of how long that thing, if it made a full circumference of the Indian Ocean, which is, debris can do, that's a circuitous current there.
Yeah.
Then it gets very dicey as to where that plane went down. And they found it a long time after. How long was it before it turned up on Reunion Island?
Probably a year or two at least.
But there's so much...
just so little information.
Just about what happened. Did they all pass out in there and the thing went on autopilot? Was it the lithium batteries they were supposedly carrying? Did it poison them? What?
You don't know, yeah.
They thought it was a maniac pilot in the beginning who took them and landed them somewhere, and some Russian spy said, they're in Afghanistan in mud huts or something, and now we find out they went down at sea somehow. But something strange obviously happened. That aircraft lost altitude. It almost seemed like a fight occurred on the plane, and then it's hard to figure out, but there's just not enough to base it on.
Right, right. It is too, it's way too recent, and
The next two books will be Amelia Earhart, which will be Then Came the Dawn is the title, and then after that it's Amityville.
You're doing an Amityville book?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And what was the one?
The all-in-one Amityville book.
What was the, go through them again? I'm sorry.
Amelia Earhart and then Amityville, the horror in fact and fiction.
Oh, okay. I thought there was one in between. All right. Amityville.
Well, there is one I'm writing, but I'm not mentioning it because it's that dreaded subject.
What do you mean it's that dreaded? Oh, UFOs. Interesting. Okay.
Report on the flying saucers.
Interesting. Jesus, dude. You're going to destroy all of my childhood mysteries by the time we're done with this. But give me all new avenues to explore. I'm interested in seeing what you get into with UFOs because you're one of the few people I would trust to take an honest and unbiased look at this subject and maybe figure something out. So I look forward to that. But be careful, dude. Just like they said that you were the most hated man in Bigfootery. I wouldn't say that about ufology. There's lots more people to hate, but it's a they eat their young. They eat their own.
Yeah, I'm going to be as objective as possible. I wish to come to the truth. So I will be as objective as possible and leave it to the reader to sum up the data, what is most reliable. I'll put it out there. It's not just going to be a mindless compendium.
I know.
Read some of these books are very good that are just a compendium, all of it. I'm going to analyze through just when it started, the behavior. I'll give you this much. A lot of people don't dwell on this fact, even though Ed Ruppelt began his book with it, his report on unidentified flying objects in 1955. He was the head of Project Blue Book in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he wrote that he was breaking the story that in July of 1952, that momentous July of 1952 when they had the most reports, when Washington, D.C. was, when all these flying saucers or UFOs at least converged on Washington, D.C. during that month, an Air Force pilot lost his cool and he fired on one of them. And the colonel tried to bust him at the Air Force base for doing that without orders. But after that July 1952, a couple of facts emerged within the pattern. One, these large formations of flying saucers were never seen over land in daytime.
Yeah.
Number two, the next major encounters with flying saucers by U.S. Air Force aircraft did include lock-ons. Their radar did lock on to a solid target. And each time they got within that gun range, it zoomed away and held its distance as though it knew the gun range.
Playing cat and mouse.
It was after that they were always seen coming in at dusk from the ocean and prowling over land at night, and they will avoid at that time. So there's an interesting pattern. After the first time, this was the first time ever one was shot at.
Yeah.
And after that, they almost seem to reveal that they know the gun range and they know to stay clear of it.
Interesting, yeah.
July of 1952, July 2 was the last time there was a large formation ever photographed over land, and that was by Delbert Newhouse of the U.S. Navy. That's the famous Utah film.
Interesting.
And 14 to 20 of those were in formation.
All right, so that's on the horizon, like a UFO. The UFO book is on the horizon, so that's...
Yes,
that's,
I dread that.
Well, if you ever need a shoulder to cry on, you can always reach out to me. You know that, buddy.
I will do that.
All
I'll
right.
Make sure you get a copy.
Awesome. Well, the new Bermuda Triangle book is out next week. It's Bermuda Triangle 2. It's by Gian Cassar. You can find it anywhere books are sold, so search it out and get it. You can read all about Eerons at the Questor Files, absolutely for free. I just ran it up on my iPad, and it was like reading a book, folks. So it's really awesome and terrifying in many, many ways. So you get deep into the details of this at the Questor Files, theQuestorfiles.com. And big thanks to Michelle Cruz for joining us on the program. She's doing incredible work, helping to get the word out about the Earons case. And let's just hope we get this guy. Let's just hope we get it. Get to the bottom of this, because it's makes me angry in a lot of ways. You know, this guy got away and he's still out there, you know, possibly. So, and I can't thank you enough, Gian, for coming back on the show. You know, this is our final season. It's certainly not the last time I'm going to be talking to you, but it's the last time in this sort of format probably. So I can't thank you enough for all the great interviews over the years, and I wanted to get you on right away as we started this new season, because I know that when we talk, we have these in-depth conversations, you know, that are just absolutely mind-blowing every time. I'm never disappointed with an interview when I have you on the show, because the stuff is so riveting. And as I said, you have this gravitas in your presentation that has me hanging on the edge of my seat, and I know it has the same effect for the listeners. So
thank you for having me so many times. It's always a pleasure to be on here.
It's a pleasure's all mine, man. I'm blown away. I really, you know, once again, you brought the goods for another classic edition of the program, and it was really riveting stuff. So thank you, and I don't know what to say. Thanks again for coming on the show, man. It's been a wild ride.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, there you go, folks. That was Gian Kassar talking about the East Area Rapist / original Night Stalker, and then getting into all of his other topics that he's looked at. The Kolchak files, as we say, or the Q files. He's the real Kolchak, and these are the Q files. And just amazing stuff. And I think maybe people can understand why I appreciate Gian so much, because on this show, we've bounced around from topic to topic to topic over the years, doing all different stuff. And the quality out from Gian covering these topics that are so diverse deserves commending, and that's why I wanted to feature him right away here on Season 10, because he's one of my favorite guests, and I knew, you know, BOA Audio has been built on these long-form interviews, and Gian Kassar is among the very, very best for those shows. Speaking of which, we're going to do another long-form show next week, my friends. Just booked this one today. Happy to report next Tuesday night, which is what? May 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to welcome back our old friend Micah Hanks for what's pretty much just going to be a jam session. We're just going to jam, talk about UFOs, I'm sure, talk about the current state of the world, and which is crazy right now. Every time I think it's crazy, it gets crazier. You know, I almost wish we had Jim Mars on to start the season last week when all this Comey chaos went down. But incredibly, it all happened tonight a few hours before the show started, and that was way off of what we were going to talk about tonight. So we didn't get into that, but we'll definitely get into it next week with Micah Hanks, and God knows what's going to happen in the next week. So I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about. And, of course, as I said, we're going to delve into UFOs. We haven't really done – well, yeah, this is the third episode, so we haven't really done much on UFOs yet. We did talk with Jim about it, but we're going to get even deeper into it with Micah. And I'll bring the goods, and I'm sure Micah's going to bring the goods. So it's going to be an awesome show, I'm sure. And, yeah, that's coming up next week, May 16th, Tuesday night. Just pencil us in for Tuesdays for the next 6 weeks at least, folks, because – we've pretty much got Tuesdays locked in at least until the 4th of July for programs, and they're all awesome. They are really, really good. I'm really curating this one this time around, folks, so I'm not going to throw any bad apples at you. And that keeps going, I guess. It started last week with Jim Mars, continued tonight here with Gian Kassar, and it goes on next week with Micah Hanks, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to try and get all the linkage and stuff up earlier at Banal of America. But if you can't find it, just keep going to Banal of America. It'll pop up, and it'll be great. So that's it. Thanks to everybody who listened. Thanks to all the folks who had kind words to say about the season premiere. Really appreciate it. Buckle up. It's going to be an awesome ride. Until next week, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.